Well, good morning. Good morning. Good morning. So this is a really good time of year. A lot of good news comes out at this time of year, right? I don't know if this is happening at all at your house, but at my house, in the mail, there's a lot of good news lately. We get graduation announcements, right? That's good. Wedding invitations have come along. We get all kinds of things like this. Online, people are revealing the gender of the baby that they're going to have. People are having showers. I mean, it's just a really good news time of year in many ways. In fact, in our family, we're awaiting the best news ever. Grandbaby coming, right? All right. Okay, so they're back in the prayer room or the cry room right now. Everything good? Okay, they're still there. So it's all good. What's the best news you could possibly hear today? What's the best thing you could hear? If you're a parent and you have kids, what's the best thing you might hear about a child today? One of your children, what would you hear? What would you want to hear? Teachers and students, you're about to hear the very best news, right? School is out. I know. Students, you think it's just you who gets excited at this time of year, but teachers do too, right? All kinds of good news coming. And in our culture, when you get some really good news, you have this opportunity, right? You can reply to it really quickly on your phone. You can send a quick message, kind of a thumbs up Yahoo message. In fact, that's what I do. I love the all emoji text message. All the emotion, none of the work, right? And so if I hear some good news from you and I want to hit you back real quick, you're going to get this emoji from me. It's going to be smiley face with sunglasses, thumbs up, fist bump, and if you're my wife, you get the smoochy face. Right? Good news. Today in our series, we're coming to the book of 3 John. We're going to study 3 John. And that's what the book of 3 John is. It's a super short, all emoji, really happy, excited text message. It's like a message you'd get from Pastor Andy Smith, right? All caps, super pumped. That's what John is. He's super pumped because he's heard the best news ever. And it comes in the form of this letter, 3 John, that we've seen. It starts this way. This is verse 1. If you want the adventure of finding 3 John in your Bible, I recommend that. Go looking for it. It's one page. It's one really short page in your Bible. Or you can follow along on the screen. It starts this way. The elder to my dear friend Gaius, whom I love in the truth. So this is a letter. It's a personal letter. We call it 3 John because we think the writer is John. The John who in the New Testament has 5 books attributed to his name, right? And so he operates as this, well, he's a pretty important guy. He's an elder. He's a spiritual mentor. He's in the very first generation of Christians. And he's writing this letter to one of his dear friends, a man named Gaius. We don't know anything about Gaius. That's a really common name. Lots of people in the New Testament named Gaius. All we know about him is that he's a dear, dear friend of John. And so John's writing him this short letter, and it starts with all the usual, the normal positive stuff that you would see in a letter. That's what verse 2 is about. Dear friend, I pray that you may enjoy good health and that all may go well with you, even as your soul is getting along well. This is pretty much what you'd expect to hear in a really nice letter from that period of time. But then in verse 3, he begins to reveal his excitement. This is where the emojis start to come in. All right, verse 3. It gave me great joy when some believers came and they testified about your faithfulness to the truth, telling how you continue to walk in it. Some people came by and they told me something that gave me great joy. They told me, now follow this, they told me, they testified about your faithfulness to the truth. And by the truth, they mean the gospel message, the good news about Jesus Christ, the Christian message and faith. So they came by and they told me about how faithful you were to the truth. Here's some further definition, telling how you continue to walk in it. That's faithfulness, right? Faithfulness is the continuing. It's the keeping at it. You stayed in it, meaning in the truth. And so John, who's the elder, John is the mentor. He's writing to his dear friend and he's saying, I am so pumped because I hear about your faithfulness. Excuse me. You're continuing. You're hanging in there. You're nailing it. You're doing it. And so when these Christians come, we're going to see in this letter this context of Christians traveling from one place to another. And these Christians have brought news from one group of believers to another group of believers that John's a part of. And he just says, I just heard the best news ever. But he goes on, it gets even a little more excited, at least for John, in verse 4. Listen to this. I have no greater joy, no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Right? These people came and told me this really good news. In fact, this is the best news that I could ever hear. You could never tell me anything that would give me more joy than this. Here it is. My children are walking, continuing in the truth. Now that we can relate to, right? If you happen to be a parent here today and you think about what is the best news, the very best thing I could possibly hear about my child, it has something to do with this, that they're in the truth, right? That they're walking in the truth. That they are continuing steadfastly in the faith. You don't have to be a parent to experience that, right? If you're a teacher, And you have students who down the road, they come back to you. What do you want to hear from them? What's the best thing that they could possibly tell you? Or if you've been a coach and you've had the opportunity to impact the lives of people and they've gone on their way and they come back years later, what's the thing that would make you say, this is the greatest news I could possibly hear? And for John, it has to do with Gaius is in the faith. He's walking. He's hanging in there. He's staying there. If you're an aunt or you're an uncle, you're a mentor, you're a friend, if you're in any relationship where you've cared about or given to or ministered to somebody, it's the best thing you could hear. And John says, for me, this greatest joy I could possibly have is to hear that you are walking in the truth. And so this whole letter starts with this attitude, sort of this environment of joy. There's great joy in faithfulness. And by faithfulness, John means continuing, walking in it, right? And if you've been on this journey with God for any length of time, you know there's highs and there's lows, right? There's blessing and there's hardship. That there are good times and there are times that seem more difficult. At the end of the day, John says, the joy is faithfulness, continuing, staying, hanging in there. There's joy for that. So what exactly did John hear about Gaius that made him erupt into the, this is the greatest news I could possibly hear? What is it exactly? You see, it's not just that you're walking in the truth. There's something very specific connected to it that defines for John what it means to be in the faith. To be walking in the truth. Here it is. Here's how you know what it is. And that comes in verse 5. This is the most important verse in the whole book of 3 John. Dear friend, he says, you are faithful in, here it is, here's what you're faithful in, here's what it means that you're faithful. Ready? You are faithful in what you are doing for the brothers and sisters. Did you hear that? That the best thing I could possibly hear is that you are walking in the faith. And here's what it means. Here's how I know beyond the shadow of a doubt that you're in the faith. It's what you're doing for the brothers and sisters. It isn't how high a score you got on the theology exam. He doesn't say that. He says, I'm so pumped that you got it, man. Transubstantiation, justification, sanctification, a whole bunch of other Asians. You nailed it. He doesn't say, man, I'm so glad to hear how good you are. You never do anything wrong. You're super religious. You never miss church. I know that means you're walking in the faith. He doesn't say that either. He says very simply, sums it all up. You're doing some particular things for the brothers and sisters. Doesn't that surprise you? Well, if it surprises you, I wanted to give you hope today. I wanted to give you hope today that for John, the Christian life, and remember, there's five books in the New Testament with his name attached to it. For John, the epitome of what it means, the goal, the litmus test, the how you know you're walking in the faith, it all boils down to the way you do some things, the way you treat some people. And here specifically, it's brothers and sisters. And this is a term, as we're going to see, that refers to other Christians, other men and women who were part of the faith. And for them, in this context, what they had is people who were traveling from one place to another. And they needed people to open their homes, to care for them, and support them as they did it. Right, is a very, very different time. For one thing, this whole Christian movement is very new. There aren't churches, there aren't messages, there isn't the knowledge of Christianity all over the place like we experience it here. It's very new. Lots and lots and lots of places where nobody's even heard of Jesus. And in order to spread, in order to take this message to people, it required people to go there. And unlike us, they didn't have motels, they didn't have Airbnbs, they didn't have credit cards. They needed a way to get there, to stay there, to eat when they're there, and to be provided for. And we're going to see that that's the kind of thing John's referring to when he says, here's how I know you're in the faith. I can tell by what you are doing for the brothers and sisters, the other people that you know that are in the family of God. Okay, but it's more than that. That's not the whole of it. This is the most important verse in the book, but the most important phrase is the very last one. You're faithful in what you are doing for the brothers and sisters, even though they are strangers to you. Did you see that? Okay, well, if you didn't see it, you weren't watching the video before where we put stranger things up there and we put the words in red, okay? I'm just saying, it was there. Even though they are strangers to you. Do you hear what he's saying? It's the epitome of the Christian faith that you would show yourself. In a minute, he's going to use the word love. You'd show your love to the other brothers and sisters, but especially, most importantly, to those that are strangers. That the way you live, the way you act, what you do for strangers, for John, is what tells him if you're walking in the faith or not. Isn't that amazing? That the measure of your faith is connected to what you do for others, and in this case, for other believers, especially those that are strangers. Now, he's not talking about the stranger danger kind of strangers, right? See, in our culture, when I was going through this week, I realized that whenever we talk about strangers in our culture, we so often are talking about, you know, the stranger danger kind, the kind we tell our kids to stay away from. That's not what John's talking about. He's talking about a different kind of stranger. These are people who were strangers in that they were unknown to Gaius. John knew them. Other people knew them. They were fellow brothers and sisters in the faith, but Gaius didn't know them. And so there's this special, special sense of love and affection that gets extended to these people that Gaius doesn't even know that tells John, this means you're walking in the faith, that I'm super pumped because you're doing this. As I said in verse 6, he uses the word love. Look at that. They've told the church about your love. Like when they came back, what they received from what you did for them was love. And this is the agape love of God, the self-giving, self-sacrificing love that puts other people first. You did that. You demonstrated that for these people. They came back. They're telling everybody about it. The way that you showed them love. And this gets John pumped because you understand John was there. John was in the room the day Jesus himself said, "Hey, I'm giving you guys a new command. Love one another. The same way that I've loved you, love one another. By this, everyone will know you are my disciples if you love one another." And so now when John hears about his friend Gaius, the person he's probably brought to the faith, mentored in the faith, now it's reported to him that he is showing this kind of love to other brothers and sisters, but more importantly to those who are even strangers to him. John says, man, this is it. You've got Jesus. Jesus. And so that's what it means at the end of this verse where it says, please, please keep doing this. Send them on their way in a manner that honors God. Give them what they need. That's what that means. Support them. Give them the food they need, the clothes they need. If they need some money, give them some money so that they can get from where they are to where they're going. Verse 7, it was for the sake of the name that they went out, receiving no help from the pagans. This is why we should help them. This is why it's a big deal. These people are on the road for Jesus. Right? And one of the commitments of the early church was if we go and tell people who don't know about Jesus, we tell them about Jesus, we don't expect them to give us anything. We don't want to take anything from them. The gospel message was given freely to us, we're going to give it freely to them. And so that meant that the few Christians that were scattered around, they would support those who were traveling and telling and giving the message. And John says there's something about that that means you know Jesus because that's what you're doing. You're showing your love and you're taking care of them. And it shows up in some very specific ways. Look at verse 8. We ought therefore to show hospitality to such people so that we may work together for the truth. We ought to do this. We ought to show hospitality to these brothers and sisters, even though they're strangers, who need this. That's what it means. To be in the Christian faith. That's what it means to show the love for one another that Jesus said you would have to show, even though they're strangers. And so John gets pretty pumped up about the way that they're treating these people. And again, it's because he was there that day. Right? He was sitting with Jesus when Jesus told that story of how it's going to be at the end. You know the story where he said, listen, it's going to be like this. People are going to get divided into two groups, one on the left and one on the right. And to the people on the right, the king is going to say, come on in. Come into your eternal inheritance. It's been prepared for you by God. Come in and enjoy it. And the reason Jesus says that he's going to say that is very, very specific. For I was hungry. And you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger. And you invited me in. I needed clothes. And you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. And when Jesus is telling this to his followers, he says, and they're going to look at me and say, what? When did we ever see you hungry? When did we ever see you thirsty? When were you ever a stranger to us? We don't understand what you're saying. And Jesus said, the king at that time is going to say, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for one of these, one even of the least of these brothers and sisters, he specifically says that. Whatever you did for them, you did it for me. And so when John hears that his dear friend Gaius is living this way, it's evidence, it's unequivocal evidence to him that he's got it, that he's living out the Jesus life, that he's in the faith, and that he's hanging in there, and he's super pumped. Whatever you did for one of these you did for me. And we have a super awesome history of this even in our church. I've heard lots of stories through the years of people, young people, they would come to Southern California. They wanted to study for ministry. They wanted to go to seminary. And so families in our church would open up their homes and people would live with them while they did that, right? That's the kind of hospitality when you open your home. It's the very deepest level. It's the very heart of this love for others. When you will go so far as to open up your home, your life to them. And John says, that's how I know you're in the faith. That's how I know you're walking with Jesus. We've got people here who do this all the time. Greg Prickett's our missions pastor, and his wife Laura, they're known for this. They'll just open their home anytime. They're always hosting people who are traveling through, missionaries and other Christian workers and just anybody who needs a time of refreshment or a day off. They're going to open their home and you can stay there. That's what John's talking about. This is how I know you're in the faith. It's how I know you're in the truth. This is why we ask you as a church family to support missionaries. That's what they're doing. They're going places where Jesus isn't known to tell people about Jesus, and they don't want to take anything from those people, so we support them so they can go and do it, and you do a great job of it. I feel like John, I'm super pumped when I think about our church and when I think about you, and I think about the many, many, many ways you show this kind of love, because this is something about Jesus when you love them. But there's more for us, isn't there? There's a further step. We touched on it this morning. We come here, we're surrounded by people that are brothers and our sisters, but many of them to us are still strangers, aren't they? We occupy the same place. We cross each other on the patio, but we haven't taken the step to go from stranger to friend. And that's still there for us. It's easy to stick with those we know. It's easy to stick with the ones we have life history with. It's sometimes more comfortable just to sit by ourselves. But Jesus is in our love for the brothers and sisters, especially the strangers. There's something about following Jesus that compels us to reach out to our brothers and sisters who are strangers to us. And the thing that compels us is at the end of verse 8 here. Did you notice? This is why. This is why you should go to the effort to turn strangers into friends. We ought to show hospitality to such people, here it comes, so that we may work together for the truth. Do you see that? So that we may work together for the truth. Right? He says, guys, I'm so pleased that you opened your home and you gave support to these people who are traveling, because when you do that, we should all do that, because when we do that, we're working together for the truth. And the truth is the gospel. The truth is the faith. Because we're in this thing together. We have this mission together of telling the world, of reaching the world for Jesus Christ. The reason for Christian friendship and Christian fellowship and Christian care and Christian support, it's never just for the good that it offers or the comfort that's received in the moment, although that's important. The reason is because when we care for one another and love for one another, we get better at working together for the truth. Right? This is what happens when people attend Rooted. The number one comment we get from people coming out of Rooted is, now I feel connected to my church. I entered the room as a stranger, and I leave the room as a friend. Because when I leave that room and go into the rest of my life, I'm on the same mission as you. That mission to live the life of Jesus out in front of others so that they'll be compelled to find and follow Jesus. And it's hard. And it goes best when we have love and support and care from others and resources. Right? John says we ought to love the brothers and sisters. We ought to show them hospitality, so that we can work together on this mission, which is hard. Okay, we have this crazy group of people in our church called the Discoverers. Okay, there are probably not too many of them in the room right now because their class that meets right now. And they've got this figured out. They're really, really good at this thing of giving care and support for one another. One of the things they do is they've got this email that goes out every week of all the ways to pray for each other. Who needs comfort? Who needs care? Who needs support? But it doesn't stop there. It always includes the mission. It always includes we're praying for these people and helping these people because they've got these friends who need to know Jesus, or they have these family members who are struggling with their faith. They've connected this idea of caring and supporting one another with the mission. And John says, that's the thing. That's how you know unequivocally that you're in the faith. You're continuing in it. You're walking in it. A couple of weeks ago, we had our annual pastors' conference in the denomination where all the church pastors from all the churches, we get together. And so often we enter that place and leave that place as strangers. But this year, they worked really hard to help us come as strangers, but leave as partners. And we came up with some new ways, some exciting ways you'll hear about later this year, that we can all as churches work together, support one another for the mission. There's a whole world of people who need to know about Jesus, and that's why we're here. And to not do this, to not support, to not be compelled, to not care, to not love, to not help and work together on the mission is evil. That's what John says. In verse 9, he changes gears a little bit, and he says, I wrote to the church. Guys, I wrote, but Diotrephes, who loves to be first, he won't welcome us. Verse 10, so when I come, I'll call attention to what he's doing, spreading malicious nonsense about us. Not satisfied with that, he even refuses to welcome other believers. And he stops those who want to do so, and he puts them out of the church. This is the opposite, Gaius, of what you're doing. It's the opposite of the way that it should be. Somebody responsible for the church there has decided we don't play with others. We don't receive them. We don't work together. And so John says this in verse 11, dear friend, do not imitate what is evil. That's evil. To refuse to receive other believers, to not show this care and compassion, it's evil. Don't do that, but do what is good. Anyone who does what is good is from God. Anyone who does what is evil has not seen God. And so it's kind of a big deal. And it's why John says, I can be so excited. This is the best news I could possibly hear. You couldn't tell me anything that would give me more joy. You're showing that you're walking in the faith by the way that you treat strangers, by the love and the support and the care that you show for your brothers and sisters, even and especially the ones you don't know. Because when that happens, something great occurs, that our ability to live together, love together, serve together, it grows, and the mission moves on. So the summer is coming. Let me ask you this, what are your plans? And let me, on the basis of the words of 3 John, let me just ask you to consider a couple of things. Number one, would you include a stranger? Right? Maybe you're planning to have some fun, to do some cooking out, maybe to go on a trip, maybe to do something fun. Maybe you'd consider including a stranger, a brother or sister that's not yet a friend, someone you don't know. And that through that mutual support, the mission of God will grow. Maybe you'll just go to the trouble to meet a stranger here and to start that process of a stranger becoming a friend. Maybe you'll really want to shake things up, sit next to a stranger in here. Dead silence. Don't mess with where I sit, Pastor. But it's that ethos, it's that compelling thought, it's that recognizing that I'm not just here for myself, that I'm in this together, and this is my family, and we might be strangers now, but we're going to become brothers and sisters. What are your plans? Your faith in Jesus is demonstrated so purely in the way that you treat strangers. Let's pray together. Lord, this is, it's a funny book. It surprises us. It's amazing to think that at the heart of what it means to live for you is simply loving others, being friends with others, helping others. And yet we know it's the defining mark of Christian faith. And so, God, deal with us today. Help us today. Most of us can resonate with the support and the love that we've received from some other Christians. And so let us be faithful in going an extra step of recognizing that there are those who don't have that. And maybe we are strangers, but we can become friends. And that through that, you're going to do something amazing. You're going to spread your love. You're going to expand your mission. You're going to reach more of our friends and neighbors. And we welcome that. And so grip our hearts today. Move our feet today. Open our arms today to the love of others. In Jesus' name, amen.